Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy National Lucky Penny Day.
Ooh, I love those pennies.
Oh, boy. May 23rd, the day that hopes you'll have good luck all day long. Heads or tails, the question is, does it matter which side you find your penny on? According to my daughter, it does. Heads, you pick it up. Tails, you leave it alone. Years ago, a penny was able to buy something, you know. Today, though, thanks to the end of, well, the gold standard and rising inflation, a penny doesn't buy much of anything. In fact, a couple of pennies, even a handful, doesn't. The metal value and cost of minting pennies exceed their face value today. Many nations, in fact, have stopped minting their equivalent value coins, and efforts are being made to end the routine use of pennies in other countries, including the U.S. For the U.S. First issued a 1 cent coin produced by a private mint in 1787. Ben Franklin designed it. No surprise there. On one side it read, "Mind your business." And the other, "We are one." First pennies struck in a U.S. mint weren't produced until 1793, 6 years later. Today, pennies may not have much value. Still, why are they considered lucky? Well, at one time, metals like copper were precious material. A penny was a valuable find. There have been a few that have made, well, $1.7 million for a 1943 D, $374,000 for a 1944 S, and 1856 Flying Eagle penny for $172,000. Alas, Melody, it's far past time in this day and age that pennies be put out of misery and into the pasture. Instead, I suggest we focus our disposable income on physical gold and silver.
Well, there you go. And you know what's interesting is it's surprising how people do not pick up change anymore.
I know.
And I, if I see a penny, I don't care if it's heads or tails, I'll pick it up. You know, because when you know it all, it's always there for when you, it's always there for when you go and buy something and it's, you know, $4.26. like, just round it out, please. But it's always there for those times. And but yeah, there's dimes, quarters, pennies. You know, I pick it up. And lots of times when you go into your larger post offices, people will get their stamps. I don't know if they do anymore. It's been a long time since I've been in a really large post office, but you could buy your stamps out of the machine. And if you wanted so many stamps, you know, the change you'd get like in, you know, 2 cent stamps or something like that. And people would just throw them away. They would just be laying them on the counter and so forth. That's money. You know, it's like, it just goes to show the lack of purchasing power and people's identity to the value of the coinage anymore, how little it means. And we all work so hard for it, but yet we're willing to throw away pennies and not bother picking them up and so forth and whatnot. So to me, it's interesting, you know, you know, but hey, I see a penny, I'm going to get it. The only time I won't pick up coinage is if it's stuck in gum.
Ew.
Sorry. They used to do that where they would kind of like glue a, you know, something to the cement or something like that. And somebody would go to, it's when money meant something, they'd go to pick it up and they couldn't get it up. And they would try desperately to try to get it up. And of course, that was the kind of a joke on them. So. But anyway, with the fiat currency, I guess now the joke is on us. So anyway, let's go and see what gold today did today. No joke on that. We had an update today. $3.30 at $1,976. Silver's up, down 20 cents at $23.53. Platinum was up $16 at $1,062. And palladium was down 39 at 1,483. And the USDX today was up 0.33 at 103.55. So, had a, you know, remember, folks, it was ready to break through 101, and now we're looking at 103.5. Crude oil was up a buck at 73.09. And let's see, I'm going to have to zoom in on that a little bit. The Dow was up down 231 points at 33,055. The S&P was down 47. The NASDAQ was down 1.25%, 160 points, 12,560. Europe was negative across the board. Asia was negative across the board. 10-year yield was down 0.019 at 3.70%. And I'll bet you natural gas was down also. And it was 2.34. It was down 0.25%. So everything was down today except, well, pretty much but gold and oil. So kind of interesting that we're seeing those items high, well, along with the dollar, but we don't include that, you know, but everything else other than the dollar and by all rights. And gold was negative most of the day with a higher strength in the dollar. I'm not quite sure how high the dollar went. I'm sure it reversed itself a little bit by end of day, but so we'll just have to see if we can find that a little bit later on. So let's go ahead and talk about what's on everybody's mind, and that's the debt ceiling. And there was another meeting at the White House, and I think both Biden and McCarthy have said they're getting closer. You know, don't give up on us. I think that's what McCarthy said. And so I'm trying to find a way to make this work. And Republicans want a deeper spending cuts, and Democrats wanted to go through without anything. The White House says its budget's planned issued in March would cut the 10-year deficit by $3 trillion, which really is a joke. There ain't no way that is ever going to happen. But through a combination of spending cuts and tax hikes. There you go, tax hikes. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. If you think that's only going to be on the wealthy, you're sadly mistaken. But anyway, but there has been no vote on that budget plan. House Republicans narrowly passed a debt limit bill that would cut the deficit on net by about $4.8 trillion over 11 years. That is not going to happen either. What say you, Dave?
Well, the question is, when will the deal be inked? Looks like it's going to take these budget caps that they actually implemented back in 2011, last time we were on the brink of default. Question is, at what level will spending be capped at? Either at the current year level or at last year's level? The Dems seem to be willing to go along with a freeze at this year's level. The Republicans want cuts overall to last year's level of spending. Meanwhile, another day ticks on. We're approaching the 11:59 hour. The think tank Bipartisan Policy Center says that next Tuesday, June 2nd, a day that will live in infamy, by the way, through the 13th, posed an elevated risk when they believe the Treasury will start running short. They talk about Shai Akibas, who's their director of economic policy, talks about the Treasury skating on thin ice during and especially after that period. And as he put it, of course, the problem with skating on thin ice is that sometimes you fall through. Well, we'll see where all this ends up, Melody. Once again, it's just another thing to talk about. Certainly actions speak louder than words. The question is, what kind of action will we see?
Well, there certainly isn't any fear that, you know, they're going to default. So I think everybody knows they're not going to allow it to happen. So, you know, it's just a matter of they're positioning themselves to see which side comes out with a little bit better viewing of themselves than the other. So who's going to, you know, they're positioning themselves to see who gets the credit of getting it done. Maybe both sides will take a bow. That's probably what there will eventually happen. But again, we've been down this road before. I think it was far worse back in 2011. It's too quiet now in order to, I mean, there's just, there was things that were going on that would create the default, but now there's no panic anywhere. There's, you know, we had a couple banks fail. I think there's more to fail, but not at the moment. I'll guarantee if two more banks failed, it would make things a whole lot worse. But heading into a three-day weekend where they keep everything calm, everything will be all nice and happy prior to. So that's my view. They'll shake hands on something and we'll see what happens. But and if they don't, then Katie, bar the door. Okay.
They better run for the fallout shelters.
And you know what? It's eventually going to happen. I mean, there's great debt too great to be paid. And they're not going to cut back $3 trillion. They're not going to cut back $4 trillion. They're not going to lower anything. They're not going to cut enough spending. You know, Lord knows what's included in these budgets and what's not. I mean, nobody reads anything, and they just so yeah, it's just a matter of time until the default does come. But Fannie Mae, you know, not only is the housing market recession not over just yet, but they think it can regain some momentum as the market moves into the slower summer and fall months. The housing market is signaling that the U.S. as a whole is headed into a moderate recession. This is all coming from Fannie Mae's chief economist, Doug Duncan. That's his warning to everybody. The government-sponsored mortgage agency predicted a modest recession to hit the economy later this year, pointing to the slowdown in housing activity. At least that's according to a revised forecast. And again, it was just put out by Fannie Mae. Through the first quarter of 2023, housing market activity as measured by private residential fixed income, and that's the core of housing GDP, declined on a nominal basis for four straight quarters. And more contractions could be on the horizon. Fannie Mae expects residential fixed income to fall by almost 6% in the second quarter, a little over 9% in the third, and another 6.5% in the fourth, and not to mention another 1% in next year's first quarter. So, you know, we've seen these existing home sales plunge to their lowest level since 2010, and, you know, they're on track to post more declines just later this year, Dave. But we, as they tell us, oh, the economy is not in a recession, just the real estate.
Well, housing. Particularly expected to fall in multifamily housing as credit conditions tighten further this year. Duncan says that there are select data available to support several alternative views of the path of the economy, though we, that is Fannie Mae, maintain our view that a modest recession will begin in the second half of 2023. Housing remains exhibit number one. Why? Now, many economists have been warning of a recession over the last year. Many non-economists like us have been, too. The mainstreamers, largely due to rising interest rates and, of course, tighter credit conditions in the economy, thanks largely to the Fed's quantitative tightening. Fed's already raised interest rates over 500 basis points in a little over a year to sort of rein in, or to try to rein in inflation, a move that's risking pushing the economy into a steeper downturn. Of course, it's always also pushed up mortgage rates, double than their lowest point during the pandemic. Now the 30 years at 20-year highs. Now, Duncan also believes that a relatively strong housing market could eventually help the economy exit a recession sometime in 2024. As we say, Melody, we shall see. I mean, as long as mortgage rates remain high with their impacts on buying, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel just yet.
No, I mean, it's like all this stuff is happening and all these things, these numbers, and they just really, and to some degree, I'm glad because it gives people another opportunity to get their house in order. But on the other hand, I scratch my head. You have all of these numbers and the declines and so forth, but yet people are in the Wall Street just move merrily on, and it doesn't seem to impact much of anything. And so it's so then when I think when it does impact, it's not going to be an easy recession or a light recession or a moderate. It's going to be a pretty heavy one. Is you put it off long enough, and it's always worse. It's kind of like, you know, when you have a disease or something, you put it off, you put it off, you put it off, and by the time you get to the doctor, you know, that's a whole lot worse. But you know, UPS, they're having these contentious labor negotiations. They're underway now. And the last time it happened was in 1997 when Amazon.com became a public company. UPS delivers millions more packages every day than it did just 5 years ago. It has 350,000 unionized workers. Of course, they're represented by the Teamsters. They still see about a contract they feel they were forced into back on 2018. So in this environment of energized labor movements and this lingering resentment among the workers, the Teamsters are expected to dig in with the potential to call a major logistical force in the U.S. 24 million packages the UPS ships on an average day amounts to about a quarter of all U.S. parcel volume. This is according to Pitney Bowes, or as UPS puts it, the equivalent of about 6% of the nation's GDP. I can't believe we're heading into break. We're already here. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Give us a call, folks. Premiums are down. I got a couple of good deals on some one-ounce backdated gold eagles coming in, and they're beautiful coins. We'll give you a really good deal on them. And again, I shop my prices online, and it's just incredible how much those dealers online are charging for items. It's just incredible how much more they're charging. I mean, and they always talk bad about $20 gold pieces. I can sell you a $20 gold piece for the same price that they're charging you for gold eagles. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading in the break, we were talking about UPS, a possible strike, and again, that could mean supply chain breakdown. But as usual, Dave, I think they'll come through with something, and if they do, you know, if they don't come to an agreement, it'll only be for a couple of days. I don't think it'll be very lengthy, but anything you'd like to add to that before we move on to
There's a lot at stake for a prolonged strike for both workers and the company. UPS returned about almost $9 billion to shareholders in the form of dividends and stock buybacks last year, and is looking for another $8.5 billion this year. And the Teamsters, who represent the frontline UPS workers, say the workers deserve some more of that windfall. So their annual profits the past 2 years are close to three times what they had been before the pandemic.
You know, the Saudis are warning of oil speculators. The oil minister told market speculators today to watch out, reiterating his warning that they could face some pain ahead. Speculators, like in any market, are there to stay, and they're going to be hurting as they did in April. The oil minister, Saudi oil minister, Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, he said, "I don't have to show my cards." He's not a poker player, but he would just tell them to watch out. He said this at the Qatar Economic Forum. A Saudi oil minister has previously struck out against the price speculators looking to profit off predicting the output decisions of OPEC. They meet again on June 4th. So, most recently, several members of the OPEC alliance voluntarily and independently from the group's broader strategy announced they would cut their crude oil production by a combined 1.6 million barrels a day. And, of course, this move briefly, you know, we saw prices get boosted, which have since surrendered those gains. ICE Brent futures with July were up 50 cents per barrel. October, OPEC, a group of 23 oil-producing nations, decided to lower output by 2 million barrels per day. I think you all remember that, Dave.
Yeah, in the week since those voluntary cuts in April, crude prices have been depressed, especially with the banking turmoil, recessionary signals, and slower-than-expected reopening across China, which happens to be the world's largest importer of oil. Market watchers are now questioning whether OPEC Plus will move toward another production decline in June to crunch prices, even as the watchdog International Energy Agency, the IEA, now sees a deep supply squeeze on the horizon. Demand is expected to eclipse supply by about 2 million barrels a day in the second half of the year, according to the IEA, and predicted that also said a U.S. debt default could trigger a significant drop in oil demand and prices. So, well, we've got Swiss bank UPS trimmed their Brent price forecast by 10 bucks a barrel to 95 by the end of the year. That's still, a good 20 bucks above where it is today. They anticipate the market will be undersupplied by about 1.5 million barrels a day as early as next month, Melody.
Well, you know, this is, again, we know that the medical industry, those costs are rising substantially, medical treatment from the lows of 2020 and 2021. This is a Federal Reserve survey that came out yesterday. The most commonly skipped form of medical treatment was the dentist, followed by seeing a doctor and paying, of course, for a prescription. Of course, we've seen inflation hit Americans across income levels in 2022, causing many to cut back on spending, and that includes health care. And that's something, just folks, you know, if you're feeling pretty good, you just don't go for your annual checkup, Dave.
Yeah, over a third of Americans, 35%, said their financial situation was worse last year than the year before, according to the survey. That's the largest share on record since the Fed started asking these questions a decade ago. Back in 20 and 21, a record low share of Americans skipped medical treatment due to cost. That was likely because they had more cash in their pockets, thanks to the government's pandemic stimulus, as well as more access generally to health care because of expanded Medicaid coverage in most states.
You're welcome. Go ahead. Indeed.
Analysts are watching to see if the line on to the taxpayers more next year. When millions of Americans are expected to lose Medicaid access. And again, those without insurance are twice as likely to skip treatment. the Fed survey found.
We haven't seen anything yet in the medical industry. Those things are just going to skyrocket to just unbelievable costs. And, you know, it's sad because, yeah, a lot of people won't be able to afford the care. But, hey, we kind of have
baby
done a
boomers,
lot of it on our own.
Baby boomers retiring, many without retirement savings. Yeah, it's going to be a really tough what do we call it? Green pasture phase of life? Perhaps not so green.
Well, there's a lot of reasons, though, too. I mean, these hospitals, once they become, you know, for profit, the way the whole medical industry, for lack of a better term right now, is changing in how they provide health care, and it's not providing it to where people have more access. It's limiting it, and we have so many more people. And when I talk to my doctor, he's a private doctor. His daughter, his two daughters, both went to medical school. One was doing her internship or her residency in North Carolina, and her boss told her to go into practice with her father, because it's changing so drastically that she would be better off working for her father and learning his older techniques, and he would be learning from her newer techniques. She would have a better career. It was a better career choice because the medical industry is just falling apart.
Oh yeah, the times are changing for so many reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, then we're looking at drugs. We're looking at the worst shortage of life-saving drugs in almost a decade. And we all know it's going to get worse. Shortages of cancer drugs, other vital medications are forcing physicians to develop workarounds. More than 300 drugs are in shortage. This is the highest since 2014. Now, this is according to the American Society of Health System Pharmacists. The American Cancer Society warned this month about potentially life-threatening supply problems of chemotherapy drugs that don't have an effective alternative. And I'd like to know where these drugs are coming from, Dave.
So. Yeah, the more of them need to be coming from the U.S., I suppose. I mean, IV antibiotics used in hospitals like penicillin, they've been running low across the country. That's amazing. Shortfalls are surfacing deeply entrenched problems in America's drug supply chain, particularly around generic drugs, which are being used more and more often. Those drugs don't turn a large profit, and companies are increasingly reluctant to manufacture them. The brand names, of course, almost always have higher out-of-pocket copays. And higher costs in general to the insurance companies that pay for them. So both the Biden administration and Congress are supposedly looking at ways to address what has now been declared a national security issue. The White House has assembled a team to look into the ongoing shortages.
Well, you know, 80% of our pharmaceuticals come from China.
Yeah.
I can give you a hint right there. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, you know, so.
Mm. Talk about leverage in the global trade. Oh, my God.
You got it. What's also interesting, I was just talking to one of my neighbors, and she was on some sort of a thyroid medication. They couldn't figure out what was wrong. You know, she just kept gaining all this weight, and finally they investigated her pill, and what it wasn't manufactured properly. There was only like 25% of what it was supposed to have in the medication. So, you know, I'm thinking if that happened to her, then how is it happening to everyone else that is taking these different pharmaceuticals? And then you have to call it my conspiracy theory mind. Where is it coming from? Is it done intentionally? You know, I mean, these are the questions that have to be asked. Just because you question these things doesn't make you, you know, a conspiracy theorist. It's just an answer we want to know. But nobody asks those questions, and if they do and get the answers, they're never released. Rarely. And then when you see how these pharmaceutical companies, how they get medication passed, it's incredible the amount of control they have on the information that is released in order to get medication approved. So, I mean, it's just like, it really, and I don't know the answers to that, Dave. I mean, I don't know how you can, you need to have people in office and in positions that are accountable, but we know there aren't.
Yeah, there's no easy solution to this issue. I mean, I suspect it would take third-party verification of clinical trials that are coming out of Big Pharma that, one, cost a lot of money, and two, take a long time, even before it gets to the FDA staff review level. And then, of course, you know, the staff makes their recommendations, and they are composed of legit scientists, some who have been in industry. But again, don't have access to all of the information that the pharmacies themselves do, who conduct the clinical trials, who produce the numbers that are reviewed by the government that eventually lead to approval or disapproval. It's
the old money game.
Yeah, it's big money too.
Big money.
Way above my pay grade, I'm afraid. But you just think there's got to be a better way.
You would think. I can't imagine what would have to happen in order until this is taken seriously. The default on our debt? That would shake things up. I saw one company that's looking to, you know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, where you now have Japan buying up a bank here in this country. And we've talked lots of times about China, but all the properties that's being bought up. And, you know, it's certainly not what it used to be. And I think that's what a lot of us would like, at least some part of what it used to be. First quarter earnings, they're telling us that it was better. Public companies, weeks of updates from big league American corporations have shown few worries about a recession. First quarter earnings season effectively finished last week. And, of course, we saw a flurry of results from all the retailers. You had Walmart, Target, TJX, Home Depot. They all posted better than expected profits. Though rising theft weighed on, of course, we talked about Target and Home Depot's top line sales numbers. First quarter numbers in hand for about 475 of the 500 companies in the S&P were better than expected. Going into earnings season, which began about April 14th, they were expecting nearly 7% year-over-year drop in earnings per share for the S&P 500, and that would have been the worst profit tumble since 2020. Earnings per share did sink, but only by 1.5%. So, why were they expecting such a bad drop and we only got 1.5? Any idea?
Good question. Well, I think, there's a presumption that the Fed interest rate hikes were going to depress growth, lead to more layoffs. Even than there were. I mean, particularly outside of the tech industry, which is seeing tens of thousands in employment reductions, just didn't materialize. I think the other side of the coin is that companies continue to take advantage of higher inflation by padding their profits. I know it's with some, it's not a comfortable position, but I dare you to defy that position with facts that show otherwise, because it's showing in almost every industry, not just oil and gas, that particularly the big companies are taking advantage of us.
I hear the music, and we'll be returning. Please stay with us.
Such a fine sight to see. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, babe, don't say babe. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody, taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. With just 10 days until the Treasury Department's hard deadline to avoid a debt default, I guess you even call it nine, Democrats' anxiety has been compounded by new regrets over how Washington has blundered to the edge of economic Armageddon. Political business leaders had long been aware of a potential debt ceiling crisis if the GOP won the House in 2022, yet the Dems appear to have underestimated Republicans' intransigence and their unity, especially behind House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. The range of Democratic regrets, which aren't necessarily shared by all factions of the party, including the White House, largely center on three strategic decisions made over the past 6 months. First, not raising or abolishing the debt ceiling when they had full control of the government. I mean, for 2 years, the D's held the White House, House, and Senate, albeit with the narrowest of majorities and pair of wild cards in the Senate with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. The Congressional Progressive Caucus called for Democrats to act on the debt ceiling in last fall's lame duck session to prevent Republican hostage-taking efforts that could result in spending cuts. Senator Tim Kaine told Politico last week that if he could do one thing different, it would have been raising the debt limit late last year. Number two, betting on GOP dysfunction without a plan B. McCarthy's tortured 15-ballot speaker election in January left the Dems skeptical that a divided GOP conference could muster the votes for a party-line debt ceiling bill. Without that leverage, the Dems reasoned, moderate Republicans might take the responsible route of voting for a clean debt ceiling bill that the president had been calling for. Instead, McCarthy again defied odds by passing a conservative wish list with just one vote to spare, thus strengthening his hand and forcing the White House to the negotiating table. And third, just not negotiating sooner. Biden vowed for many months he wouldn't negotiate over the debt ceiling, arguing it would only reward the GOP's hostage-taking. But that's indeed the position he's in now, even if the White House continues to claim these are separate negotiations over the budget. Representative Jared Golden of Maine said his team and leaders in the Congress were mistaken if they thought that refusing to go negotiate was the strongest point, arguing that the D's may have been able to push for tax hikes on the rich if they had started talks earlier. Asked if revenue raisers could still be on the table, a senior House Democrat said, I think this is just starting too late. It's too precarious, and sadly, most would argue we missed the boat. And now, money is also time. Uncle Sam's checking account, otherwise known as the Treasury General account, held at the New York Fed, is dwindling fast. The last weekly update on the general account showed the balance falling to less than $61 billion. That's its lowest level since the recent round of haggling over the debt ceiling debate began. The so-called X date, when this account, which fluctuates depending on tax collections and government payment, no longer has enough money to meet all the country's financial obligations, potentially triggering that technical default. President Biden and Speaker McCarthy held what they described as productive talks at the White House late yesterday, but again, no deal. A month ago, many on Wall Street who were closely tracking the debt ceiling issue thought the true X date would likely come sometime in July or even early August. But April yielded disappointing tax revenues, likely due in large part to the ugly year Wall Street had last year, which cut capital gains tax receipts, leaving the Treasury less wiggle room than it had expected. Many analysts now think the moment of truth will actually come sometime in early June, which the Treasury has publicly been saying for months. Too big to fail, Goldman Sachs believes that by June 8 or 9, cash is likely to drop under $30 billion, and at that point, they believe there are even odds that the Treasury exhausts its funds entirely. J.P. Morgan Chase said that up until May 4th, their view was that the X date would be mid to early August. But after a weak tax receipt data from April, again, likely driven by those lower capital gains taxes, the date was revised to June 9th and now June 7th. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, as classic rocker Steve Miller still croons, time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. And that future is now. Hey, according to economist Paul Krugman, the U.S. doesn't actually have to pay off its $31.4 trillion mountain of debt, saying it really doesn't matter. Could he be right? I mean, after all, we rail about high government debt all the time on this program. And Krugman's hitting back at the idea that government finances can be compared to household balance sheets just 2 weeks before the U.S. possibly defaults on some of its obligations. Though individual and even corporate borrowers are expected to pay off its debts, the same isn't true for governments, at least according to Krugman. On Friday, in an op-ed, he argued that because, unlike people, governments don't die, they gain more revenue without each passing generation. Governments then must service their debts, that is, pay interest and repay principal when bonds come due, but they don't necessarily have to pay them off. They can issue new bonds to pay principal on old bonds and even borrow to pay interest as long as overall debt doesn't rise too much faster than revenue. Though the debt held by the public to GDP ratio hovered around 97% last year, and I think it's at 100% this, interest payments on that debt is only around $395 billion, according to the Office of Management and Budget, or just 1% of last year's GDP. Historically, it's also unusual for governments to pay off large debts, Krugman says, such is the case for the UK, which has largely held on to the debt it incurred as far back as the Napoleonic Wars. Krugman's argument comes amid growing contention over the US's debt level, with policymakers still sparring over the conditions they want to raise the country's borrowing limit. House Speaker McCarthy has said he would reject the short-term debt ceiling increase unless deep spending cuts are negotiated. Of course, having proposed a bill that would slash around $4.5 trillion on spending over 10 years. Now, Congress has less than 10 days to raise the borrowing limit before the government could potentially run out of cash, according to Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary's warnings. A default in the country's obligations could result in catastrophe for financial markets, experts say. Krugman, for his part, has called for the debt ceiling to just be abolished. Let me know what you think about this, please. Does the U.S.'s debt level matter? Email me, Dave Allen, one word, A-L-L-E-N, at .usa at yahoo.com. DaveAllen.usa@yahoo.com. I'll read your thoughts in a future financial survival program. And next, an intergenerational transfer of wealth is in motion in America. And people are saying it will dwarf any of the past. Plus, it will reinforce the growing wealth inequality we've begun to see over the last few decades. Of the 73 million baby boomers, the youngest are now turning 60. The oldest boomers are nearing 80. Born between 1946 and 64, as birth rates surged in tandem with an enormous leap in prosperity after the Depression and World War II, boomers are now beginning to die in larger numbers, along with Americans over 80. Most will leave behind thousands of dollars, a home, or in some cases, not much at all. Others are leaving their heirs hundreds of thousands or millions or hundreds of millions of dollars or more in various assets. In 1989, total family wealth in the U.S. was about $38 trillion, adjusted for inflation. By 2022, that wealth had more than tripled, reaching $140 trillion. Now, the $84 trillion expected to be passed down from older Americans to millennial and Gen X heirs through 2045, $16 trillion will be transferred within the next decade. A chart that shows a breakdown of the $140 trillion in total wealth in the U.S. held by four generations, where baby boomers have the most, $78.3 trillion in assets. Heirs increasingly don't need to wait for the passing of elders to directly benefit from family money. And that's a result of the bursting popularity of giving while living, including property purchases, repeated tax-free transfers of estate money, and more. And that's providing millions with an important head start. It's no longer an oncoming phenomenon, according to Doug Bonparth, a 38-year-old financial advisor. It's present day. It's now. And it's already impacting the broader economy, greasing the wheels of social mobility for some and leaving obstacles for those left out as the cost of living, housing, and raising families surge. The wealthiest 10% of households will be giving and receiving a majority of these riches. Within that range, the top 1%, which holds about as much wealth as the bottom 90%, and is predominantly white, will dictate the broadest share of the money flow. The more diverse bottom 50% of households will account for only 8% of the transfers. Now, wealth by percentile of wealth demonstrates that the top 10% hold $95 trillion of the nation's $140 trillion in wealth, while the bottom half holds just $4 trillion. A key reason there are such large soon-to-be-inherited sums is the uneven way boomers superbly benefited from price growth in the financial and housing markets. The average price of a house has risen about 500% since 1983, when baby boomers were just in their 20s and 30s. As U.S. corporations have grown into global behemoths, those deeply invested in the stock market have found even bigger returns. The stock market is measured by the benchmark S&P 500, is up by more than 2,800% since the beginning of 1983. That's around the time index funds took off as a mainstream investment for corporate employees, as well as many other middle-class professionals. Now, those figures do not include dividends and are not adjusted for inflation, which they have far outstripped. Consumer prices have risen about 200% over those same 40 years. Experts say, that housing discrimination and a lack of access to financial tools and advice for people of color led to the discrepancy and in the unequal distribution of financial assets. But the wealth transfer in its full scope, like any widespread phenomenon, will certainly have many nuances. A patchwork of lower wage earners may be able to move into a parent's paid-off home in a hot housing market, or may receive a small windfall still meaningful enough to pay off their debts. And of course, there will be millennials, Gen Xers, and younger boomers in the upper middle class set to inherit large sums who will wrestle with the substantial headaches dealing with the time, expense, and stress of caring for aging parents and children all at once. There are a few aspects of economic life that will go untouched by the knock-on effects of the handover. Housing, education, healthcare, financial markets, labor markets, and politics will all inevitably be affected, proving all over again that no good deed goes unpunished. That, my friends, all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks to, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. Got me.